Okay, today's Dr. Daf Lamed. We ended the shiur. We were sort of kind of sidetracked, but for the reason why you'll see in a moment. Because the Mishnah itself talked about the fact that Rebbe Elazar disagreed with the Chachamim on the concept of a matnat shchiv merah, that he says there's no difference between someone gravely ill or normally need a proper kinyan, whether it's fully healthy. And so all the discussion we're discussing about the difference in the kulas and the ramifications of shchiv merah doesn't apply according to Rebbe Elazar. Then what we did when we started the Gemara, we're looking at the question of what does it mean that nechasim she'ein lehem achrayot and nikne agav nechasim she'yesh lehem achrayot, which means that the mechanism that you use to purchase land, which you can't use for metaltalin, if the metaltalin is, we'll say it simply, is on top of it or with it, like bundled into the land, then you could. And the question the Gemara addressed was, does that metaltalin physically have to be on the land you're selling to do so? That was the question. And that has advantage because we had this individual who was in Yerushalayim, the Meroni, that he was wanted to give his certain possessions away that weren't where he was located. And if it's metallically movable objects, you cannot do that on its own. You have to literally physically hand it over to someone. There has to be a mashiach to do the kinyan. But what they suggest is, okay, buy a small little block of land, and agav that land, then when you sell it, you can give it to somebody else by way of kesef shtach hazaka, and along with it, the matal to another location. That was the suggestion. So the conclusion that we got up to at that stage, or that's what we assumed to be the conclusion would be, is that, well, you see, therefore, the kinyan agav karaka, the metaltalin doesn't have to physically be on the land. Because in this situation, you use land here as a mechanism to also agav, transfer the ownership of metaltalin, move object that was far away. Okay? However, the Gemara then continues. It says, Amar Rav Chananya, Komei Rav Mana, V'lo Shchiv Merahu. How can you bring a proof from that case? That individual was gravely ill. And it says, L'fish B'koma, Komei Adam B'zakeh L'Bechtav. Normally, in order to effect an acquisition, to transfer of ownership, you have to do it with writing. V'cha, Afilu B'dvarim, you see, by Shchiv Merah, there's a tremendous leniency. You can just do it by his declaration alone. L'fish B'koma, Komei Adam B'zakeh Anshu Karko Metaltel Mamachad. Normally, you might think that, yes, you require Kinyan Agav for the Metaltel to have a Kinyan Agav Karka, it has to be on the Karka. Well, maybe in this situation we're lenient because we're shchimera. So how can you bring a proof from that case? The Gemara continues, but one second. Amar lei v'lo Reb Eliezer hi. It wasn't this incident we brought regarding the direction of, if you like, Reb Eliezer, because there's Amar lei because Reb Eliezer meisa b'moroni, and Reb Eliezer a shnia hi. According to him, is there a difference between a shchiv mera and a regular person? Shchiv mera the Reb Eliezer kabari the rabbana. That there is no leniencies or differences afforded to a Shchiv Merah called the Reb Eliezer. So if in this situation, who cares if it's a Shchiv Merah? It doesn't make a difference. There's no leniency. So therefore, the fact you allow Kinyan Agav Karka for Metaltalin that was in a completely different location must mean it works across the board. So I'm really indeed, you're right. Shchiv Merah, the Reb Eliezer, Kabari Rabbanan. That seems to be, because of his position that he really holds is a difference, it makes a lot of sense. Okay. Tamantanina. Rabbi Akiva Mar Karka Kolshehu. Now, insert a little bit here. Chayv V'Peo Bikurim. That even the smallest amount of land, it can be chayv peah and bikurim, and also karka koshu, and sorry, as and the bright, if you like that, the Mishnah continues, that you can also do a kinyan agav karka with karka koshu. So this is an attempt to try and prove that, well, a tiny, tiny piece of land, you've got a, and you're trying to do a kinyan agav karka with lots of metaltalin, so it must be, it doesn't have to be physically situated on the land. This is attempted another proof. So the Gemara now says, and it's in the Kakarko Shu Mahuta, because Mahuta, what can you possibly do? What are some of Matnaya? No. Well, pair works, for example, Makom Shibolatechad, for even one stalk. And also, you can do it. It could be that for a king Agav, Karaka has to be on the Karaka. And what are you selling along with this piece of Karaka? A small valuable gem that's on the Karaka Koshu. In a Margalit Munaba that is buried there. Okay. Fine. If let's continue. So Amar, I kind of explained the stalk and the gem is referring to different things, Peah and the Kinyan Agav, but other Mefarshim claim differently, but I will continue. So let's continue. Amar Rav Yossi Bar Bun, Ilaya Rotzela Kalalan, Shehem Zorin Kor Kurkumin Bekerem. So there's many, many ways to explain what this means, but in a nutshell, what this refers to, if you remember, they tried to bring a proof against Reb Eliezer, sorry, from the case of this Iman Shel Shnei Borochal, that she was unwell and she says she wanted her particular valuable peace to be given to a daughter, and the Chachamim came to Rav. And Amar Lahem, the response was that no, Bnei Rochel tikbar mimam, that the Bnei Rochel, the mother should bury them because they were a Rishayim, if you remember. So there's different ways to explain what the Gemara is saying. It's saying, Ilai yarotzela kalalam shim zorim karkamim. So the Ilai usually means like a excuse, a way of, like an opening, if you like. So Alila Matzah Marfulda says, Sharotzela kalam. He wanted to curse them, Al Shazaram Karakum Bekerem, because they were planting Karakum saffron in a vineyard which is over in the Kilakerem. Vehashta Matzah Alila. Now he had his opening, Koldu Al Yedei Shikansu Oto Lefisha Rashimayot. He found, if you like, he found his way of doing so because the Chachamim, if you like, were applied a knas in that context. I'm not sure if it was an opening for him to do the cursing or different ways to explain exactly what that actually means, but that's what it sounds like. Yeah, the mouthful, if we play Moshe Sam, you know, he wanted to curse him because of that. Okay? Because of the fact that there were Zohar in the Kerem, that's what Moshe says. Okay. Okay, I'll just show you I'll just do a bit more on the Pnei Moshe. I just only saw this now, I didn't see it before. It says, Reb Eliezer, Ila Matzah ben Erechol, v'yarotzele kal mishpagach, v'meshe ozorim ke korkom bekeren. However, Chachamim sver l'dakotzim bekeren hayu. That these are just considered thorns and thistles of the saffron. That it wasn't salt, it was just simple thorns. V'sverle ha-makayim kotzim bekerem, if you keep kotzim in a kerem, lo kidesh, it's not considered over in this kele kerem. So they weren't considered, if you like, Rishayim in that context. So that seems to be the way the Pnei Moshe said the tension in terms of how do we interpret that case, whether it's really proof or it's not proof. Okay, that's it. Okay, let's continue the Mishnah. The Chachamim b'Shabbat, the Reb Kaimim, neisha eni achol lichtov, aval lo b'chol. So the Chachamim, this is another position. We're trying to understand, when do we say Nafshchi Merah works? Koy Chachamim, it sounds like it's only on Shabbat, where you can't do a formal kinyan. That's why the concept of the lings of a Shchiv Merah, that they can simply, that he can just transfer ownership by making this declaration, because there's no other opportunity for him to do it, and he might die. So they were makil, if you like, on Shabbos, but in that context. But during the week, well, he can do a kinyan, so you have to do a kinyan. In other words, you only have the leniency afforded of a Shchiv Merah on Shabbos itself. However, Rabbi Yeshua says, "B'Shabbat emru kavachomer b'chol." Says the opposite. If on Shabbat it works, kavachomer b'chol. And why? And this is a concept we see all over. That kol aroi lebila bila enu me'akev for kol she'enu bila mila akev. Meaning, if there's a process that refers to like the mincha offerings and stuff, that bila mixing it together is not me'akev in general. However, if there's a quantity. That's the context of the quantity, such a huge quantity, where you couldn't be able to do bila itself, then it's ma'akev. So this is kind of like the same thing. You would say that if you could do a kinyan, this is like the mixing, then the kinyan shouldn't be ma'akev. However, if you can't do a kinyan, the kinyan is ma'akev. That's kind of the parallel. So therefore, if on Shabbos, where you can't do the kinyan, nonetheless, we still say that ma'afshchiv mara can go ahead, just by the verbal declaration, sakav chomer in chol. Because if you couldn't do one chol, then certainly on Shabbos you wouldn't be able to do it. Yeah, kind of that's the way he's saying it. So ketzad, kiyotze, but simply zachen the katan. The concept that I can be zochen the katan, I can transfer ownership to a katan by way of giving over to a gadol to acquire it for him. However, ain't zochen the gadol. That was assumption that zachen and works for a katan, not for a gadol. Rabbi Yeshua says no, the katan amru kav chomer le gadol. Right. In other words, it seemed to be the assumption was again. That they only allow the concept of Zachin for a katan who cannot acquire for himself. And based on the same rationale, we say, no. If it worked like Kolaro Bila type of rationale, or logic, that if it works for a katan, Kavachama, it would work for a gadol. Meaning, if a katan who can't acquire it, you can acquire it for him, the gadol who can acquire for himself, Kavachomer, another person acquire for him. Okay. Yes, I think that's the way he explained it. Okay, fine. Let's continue. Now, the Gemara says, some people actually teach it the other way around, meaning. So I'll explain my meaning around in terms of how the Kavachom works. For example, Rabbi Shua ben Levi says, Kinem aniti, im b'Shabbos, if on Shabbos, Kavachomer would work on Chol, which is the way we explained it. However, Tani Tani Machlif, some people teach it the other way around. Ita Machlif, I'll just show you the marfil. It says, B'divrei Yeshua, B'chol Amru, if it works on Chol, sorry, on Chol they allow it, Kavachomer, therefore they allowed it on Shabbos. Meaning, that the Chol they allow, in other words, the starting point to allow on Chol, where someone does have it at their disposal, meaning they could do a kinyan unless Chachamim will relax the laws for a shechiv merah because he's also chish, and we don't put on those pressures on someone in that situation. Kal v'chomer on Shabbos, when you don't have the capacity to do any kinyan, they allowed it as well. So in other words, it's kind of different. It's, the way we explain the Mishnah, it was like a more like a technical kolor concept. But here, he's saying no. The whole reason for to be lenient, to be makel on the person, because he's in his mind's not in a good place. We don't put any pressures on someone in a precarious situation while they're gravely unwell. And if they're allowed it during, and because it, if they're allowed it during the week, then kal v'chomer Shabbos where you don't have a proper kinyan at the disposal. So it's another. That's what we how we be machlif here. Rabbi Shua ben Levi once said, "Kene maniti im katan amru kal v'chomer gadol," like we just said. However, there's also it's tani and also itani. It's clearly marafal to have the gear. So here itani machlif. That's the other way around, meaning begadol they allowed zachin. That was from the outset. That was the takana. Have a kavachomer. Therefore, they allowed a kata. Meaning shetiknu lo takana that they made a takana for him because he has no means of acquiring anything for himself. Okay, so that's why we're switching it around. The different ways of reading the Mishnah. That is. Let's continue. This is in a halacha tet. Nafala bayit alav alaviv. Let's say a house fell on a person and his father. Alav on him va'al yoshav, or someone who is inheriting, va'alav al morishav, or on him, on someone he is going to be getting property from. Okay? V'atalav ktubat isha u'bal chov. Okay? And there is a ktubat to be paid and a bal chov. So let's look at the case. We've put multiple cases here. So we're talking about a person and say his father. The person, his father, building claps on them both. And the question is the order who died first. Now, that's going to be critical because if, let's say, the son didn't have very many assets and the father was quite wealthy, well, if the father died first, the son was yorish that, and all the creditors and the ketubah and all these place people would be able to have money from what to get their money back. However, if the son died first, then he was never yorish to the father's property and they've got nothing, meaning they can't collect any money from anywhere. That's effectively the case. So he says, Yoshe Av, so the Yoshe Av, they said the Ben died first, so therefore, goodbye, you get nothing from us. However, the Vachak, however, the creditor of the son, is going to say the opposite. No, Omrim no ha'av met Rishon, the father died first, Vachakach met ha'ben. And then the son died, so therefore, he was Yorish to a certain portion of that estate, and now we've got from what to collect our money from, so give us our money back. So Beis Shammai says you've got a suffix in this situation, you don't know who died first, therefore, yachaloku. Therefore, they have to divide it. Behilomrim, hanechasim bechezkatan. Nechasim bechezkatan means, I'll show you Fulda says, bechezkat yorshim. Ukeshemachzikim damu, meaning the property at before the building collapsed. Whose property, who had the chazak on the property of the father? The father. Okay? The father was, it was his property. So therefore, it's bechezkat the yorshim of the father. And to break out of the chazakah, the burden of proof would be on the creditor to say that the father died first. That's what it's trying to say. Therefore, Bachol trying to have, I love therefore, it's on him, love, raya, to bring the proof, sha'av met tchila. Okay. Next case. Nafal alav alishto. What happens if the building fell on a man and his wife? So the question is the asset, the ketubah, the property of the wife. So the Gemara says, Yorshei ha-ba'al, the heirs of the husband, omrim, that the wife died first, and that husband inherited all that property, so it belongs to who? It belongs to them. Met rishon met ba'al. But Yorshei isha say, no, the husband died first, therefore the husband never was yorish to any of this woman's property. V'chakach met ha-ish das, so therefore, go away. It's not yours, it's ours. Okay, Beit Shammai says once again, Yachaloko, it's a suffix or a situation of who died first, therefore they divide it. Or Beit Hillel or Rim, well, it depends. What type of property are you talking about? Because according to Beit Hillel, it's important to understand who had the chazaka on the property before this death occurred. So when it comes to Nechasim Bechezkatan, so what that means is, different ways to explain the Mishnah, but the Rami Mafold explains it here is that the Nechasim Bechezkatan means that the Nechzei Tzon Barzel. Nechzei Tzon Barzel is that property that's brought into the marriage by the wife, and the value of it is written down, and that value has to be returned. Okay, so if it goes up and down in value, the husband bears the responsibility. So in that situation, it's not clear what Beit Hillel means, and therefore that's a case of Yachloku. That's what it says. Okay. Wait, what about the ketubah? Who had the chazaka on the ketubah? Well, the husband. It was still in his possession. She hadn't died yet, and he has to pay the ketubah on event of divorce or death. So therefore, he has a chazaka on the ketubah. So the cheskon Yosha Baal. Therefore, Yosha Baal get the ketubah. What are the nechasim and nechnasim yotzim? What about the property she brought into the marriage that are nechasim malug? And this is a property that the husband can enjoy the peirah from. If it goes up and down in value, he's not responsible for that. He doesn't get to enjoy that. It's just to get to the peirah. And they're really still bechezkata. They're considered her property. So therefore, in that context, therefore they go to the chezka yishayah av, which is effectively to the or yishayah em, meaning the it goes to the av. It's really the av of the wife of the wife that died. So it goes with that side of the family. Okay. Let's continue. Nafala like next case, a building fell on him, a person and his mother. And in that case, look, everyone agrees that they split it evenly, meaning the Yorshe Ben and the Yorshe Imo. So Amar Rabbi Akiva, Moda Ani Bazeh, I agree in this question. Nachasim bechezkatam, we still got a chazaka. What does it mean bechezkatam? Meaning, in other words, he says that according to Beit Hillel, there's still a machloket. Ha'av, well, that's related to the mother. Sherei kol yamei chayayisha shalachar shemet bala, after the husband passed away, and the ketubah was hers. Haya mamon shalah bechezkata. So therefore, even that situation, we can identify a chazaka on the property. So therefore, they should still belong to the mother. Meaning Yorshe, therefore Yorshe ha'av, meaning her heirs. So Amar lo ben azeh ala chalukim ana mitzdarim. We have so much. The fact we've got machlokas, it's a pasuk. That's not enough that now you want to introduce and say in this case there's also machlok in this case. But that's objection. Now the Gemara says, Nafala bait alav alaviv, Amar of Shmuel bar Yitzhak, Zotomer ben Azai Chaver the Talmid the Rabbi Akiva. Chaver Talmid meaning he was also Chaver meaning he was a counterpart. Because the fact not just his Talmid, because if he wasn't a counterpart, how can he refer to him? I'll just show you here. The fact he spoke to him in like first person and not in a third person respective way of addressing him must mean that he was a peer in that sense. Okay. The Gemara continues. Get Pashut. Now, this Perek discusses once again, begins by discussing this get Mekushar. And we actually did this in a lot more detail in Masechta Gittin together. If you remember the two ways to write a get, one is simply an open piece of paper, the writing's on the top and the signature's at the bottom, very simple. The other ones in the get in Kushar, if you remember, they were made in this takana because the kohanim were a little bit hot-headed. And we were scared that if they too quickly, say, divorce their wives and then calm down and want to remarry, well, they can't remarry in that situation. It's not a matter of Grusha. So they made this process of delaying it in a way. So if you remember what happened is they would write a line, they would fold it down, stitch together, and write a line and keep on doing that process. And then you'd have, if you like, all these folds that were kind of like this, right? And in between the folds, this is where they'll write the signatures on the back. Okay? So there was more than two signatures, say three, and it was on the back of the document. That's an and with all these folds, and it was folded and sewn together. That really slowed down the process. That's a get mekushar. Now, the Gemara says, Pashut shekatvo edo. If you've got a normal document and you have the signatures on the back, umukushar, and a stitched document, as we said, shekatvo edo, the signatures on the inside, well, that's the opposite location where they're meant to be, that's pasul. Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel omer, if it's a mukushar that the witness is on the inside, well, that's not a problem because what you can do, you just undo the stitching and it looks like you get Pashut now when the signatures are on the inside. So, Rabban Gamliel says, however, hakol kamin hagabinina. Now, what's this hakol kamin? So the Marafold explains, Pukta ba atra denahig bashut mekushar. So we're talking about a case, in other words, this is not connected to the discussion above, but rather we're talking about in a case where there is a minhag to both write these get pashut and get mekushar. Va'amarli, and he was instructed, avid mekushar, go write me a get this mekushar, va'azil va'avidli pashut, and end up writing a pashut, an open document. Or if the opposite. So Tanakh Kava Sabar, according to the Tanakhama, he holds that Makbid Kapidu Pasul. Because he instructed a particular category of document here, of shtar, and a person wrote a different one, well, then it's pasul. He's gone against the wishes of the individual. However, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, no sabar ul minhag migam, since it's the minhag makom that they both can be used interchangeably, they were both used frequently, then lo kapir, therefore, is not kapir, then it's not a, he wasn't really being makpid to someone this particular type, and therefore it is kasher. So that's the explanation there, what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is doing. Okay, let's learn the Gemara. Get pashut edam mitochol. Get pashut, the signature's on the inside. Minayin get hamekushar. Now the Gemara says, where do we know this from? We remember we saw this together. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyah when he went by the field of Hanamel. It says, "Ve'kachet ha'sefer ha'mikneh," and continue, "Et ha'chatum ha'mitzvah ha'chokim ve'tagalui." So what's all these things? Et ha'chatum, that refers to get mukushar. Et ha'galui, the open, ze ha'pashut shebe mukushar. Pashut ben mukushar sounds like, the way the Marfulda explains it at least, is that the toref and the tofes. The toref is the part with all the customizable parts, if you like, of a document. The names, the date, things like that. That was in the Mukushar component. And the Toref sounds like was done, the regular text was in the unfolded. So it sounded like they didn't necessarily fold up the whole document, according to the simple reading of the Gemara here. Okay, which I'm not sure if we saw that before, but anyway. And then it says, what's referring to? There's a difference between a get Mukushar and a get Pashut. One has two sets of witnesses, meaning a normal get, a normal document, whereas a get mukushar, a shtar, a folded one has to have, well, has then it's three, and also where the signatures are meant to be. Okay, then we know those differences. Actually, no. He actually wrote two documents, it sounds like. He wrote a normal document, a pashut. That's mukushar. That's a pashut mukushar. That's the, if you like, the open part of the folded document. As we said, and the different halachas between the two, okay, the differences we said before, whether the signatures are inside and outside, the number of signatures are different. Now, let's continue. So, Rav Idi b'shem Rav Yirmiyah, halacha mekushar, kach hu kotev, shem malve v'shem love, v'shem edim, v'zman u'makashro v'chozer v'katav ken milamata. Now, the simple reading of this sounds like that they would write the names of the Lover, the Edim, etc., inside the folds, and the Chozer write the whole thing again, Milamata. That's what it sounds like from the reading. It's just interesting. I saw the article quoted the Rashbam that actually says, no, it was actually the Tof, like with the things we brought up above, the Toref was written in the folds, and the Tofes was written in the open part. But the Mara Fulda quotes the Tosefta, and I looked up the Tosefta. The Girus of the Tosefta that he quotes is this: "Ktav Shem Alove Shem Amal Shem Alove Makom Alokeach Makom Amocher Makom Asadeh Makom Amaot Makom Azman." All the various important details: the Tamamani, the location, the date, the location. Koshru Milamala Va'edim Milamata. Now he says, Kosher milamata va'edim milamata. Milamata doesn't mean the bottom of the document, it means on the other side of the document, according to him. Now, if you say that's what the Gemara means, for v'kotev ken milamata means it's actually referring to this is a bit of a chiddush here, but I think if you say it's referring to that, like if the Gemara Fulda is referring to the Breita and we explain the Breita like the Chazon Cheskel, then ken milamata must mean the edim on the back. So we're talking about the thing. And then it makes a lot of sense the next line of the question of the Gemara. Because if you remember, one of the basic questions was with a get mekushar, that if the signatures are on the back of the document, what stops someone from writing what they want towards the bottom of the document further on? Because if there are signatures in a normal document, a get pashut, where the shtar is written, all the text, and you put signatures at the bottom, no one can add anything after that, because it's after the signatures. But if the signatures are on the back, then what's stopping Brian? And that was the catch we saw in Gittin. So that's why I think it works very nicely if that the when it says Kotav Kemilamata, it's actually referring to the signatures on the back of the document. Get a bit of a chiddush here, but it says, but that's why the Gemara says, Vachashlomashemazayat. But then you're going to run into the problems of maybe people are going to inject what they want on the inside part of the Mukushar part. So the Gemara says, like we saw before, Amaravuna, meaning before I didn't get in, Lolam Eidim Chotmi Milamata Adchi Ru'u Bo Milamala, that the Eidim wouldn't write, sign, sorry, until they saw the text in the bottom of the document, אני פלוני ופלוני מקבל עליו כל הכותוב למעלה. It's, I probably the gives this slide in here, but they wouldn't, in other words, they wouldn't write that they wouldn't sign until they saw effectively a line that signed off that this is basically the end of a closed bracket of the document. That's, I think, why we explained it before. Now, Rav Ba B'Shem Rav B'Shem Rav says, Tzrichim ha'edim shelo, insert the word here, shelo liot rechokim min haktav b'kom shtei shittim. We're concerned that if in a normal document, there can't be a two-line space between the end of the document and the signatures. I think you showed us a document when we learned this in Gittendorf. You showed us a get, or was it that had the signatures were very, very large to make sure the space was filled in. I think that's what you showed us, right? Okay. Because why? Because the concern is you can inject anything into those two lines. One line's okay because we said you don't learn from the last line of the document. Okay. But the two lines, no. So Rav Idi says, "B'shem Rav Yirmiyah, Mekushar shekatvo edav le'orko, Pashut shekatav edav le'rochvo." Which I said, "Vahenem le'go, vahenem le'bar." So the first opinion, this is, we saw this also. It seems that this sugya is a line. It's like even the Pnei Moshe makes a note of this, that the flow of the sugya seems to be a little out of order, because like a kasha we brought that I stress is made sense to make. When we saw it, the kasher of that it could be Mezuyov, he understands should be placed a little bit after the next few lines, because now the discussion is how are the signatures written? So if you remember, Rabbi Yirmiyah's opinion was that it was written on the back of the document, not in line with the folds, but vertically, right? I mean, they'll write it like a normal word, but they'll turn the page 90 degrees and write the signatures across the length of the document. That's his opinion. And also on the back of the document. So once again, Remir said, they write it on the length of the document, so nine, perpendicular to the text of the actual of the document itself. And Pashut Shekatov Edav L'Rochbo, and a normal document, it's in line with the text. Ahen Milago, Ahen Milabar. Again, one's the get Pashut is, as we said, on the inside, and the get Mekushar, the signature on the back. Amana says, Eichi Avid, how would they sign? Now, this is the other Shita. That's what I can see. The flow of Gemara is a little bit funny. It says, Amar Mana, Ketzad Eidim Kotumim Beget Mekusha, how would you do so? Amar Rav Chuna, Ben Kesher Le Kesher. Ben Kesher Le Kesher, as we said, is on the back between the folds, so in line with the text. That's the other Shita. And that's why it makes sense. The next question is going to be, Chashlomah Shem Yazayef, that we should go back to the question. It's a bit of out of order. Pnei Moshe says. So Amar Rav Idi, and now we go back to this concept we saw as well. Amar Rav Idi, in a normal document, you can't have a gap between the text and the edim of two lines. Shimon Bava says, "B'shem Melchan, chalak makom shteitim le'inyan acher." If in that space of two of lines, you start writing something in, a filu culture or something else, it's possible. Because that's dividing between the signatures and actual. In other words, if it's the inyan acher, if you fill it in with other witnesses, we've discussed that's a different thing. You could fill it in with witnesses if you remember, but to fill it in with other matters, that's not good, right? Afilu koshu. Now this afilu koshu, the Korban Ha'eda said, if you remember back in Gittin, says that even if it's me'ein edu but not edu, like it could be a problem. You'll see what I mean by me'ein edu in a minute. Because that's why it explains the flow of the Gemara as it continues now. Amrav Shmuel Barav Yitzhak, Rav Yitzhak, sorry. Matnit Amraken, Edechad Ivri Ve'edechad Yavani Ivri. And then it continues, like if you remember, Edechad Ivri Yavani Yavani Ivri, or Ivri Yavani Yavani Ivri. So that referred to, remember we've got like a, there was like, if you look at the page here, like we've got two shtarot side by side, like in a book. And you had witnesses running across the bottom. So if it's Hebrew, Hebrew text runs this way, right? And English text or the Greek text runs the other way. So if it's Ivri running this way, then that's the shtar he's done the first signature on. Then you've got Yavani going the other way. That's the shtar he's going on. The problem is if it's Ivri, Yavani, then Yavani, this is the way that Lizamara fully explains it, and then Ivri, the problem is you've got two signatures with, that meaning, the Yavani signature, the Yavani's which on this document, you have a Ivri signature intervening in between. And his understanding, because it says like Reuven Ben Yaakov, that Ben Yaakov is Inyan Acher. It's another matter. Meaning because it's not a full witness for testimony, it's not Eidot for this document, it's Eidot for that document.
And because of that, it's inacher, and I've inserted a kolshu, and that's why it is considered pasul. So in other words, even though we saw this case in a lot more detail when we learned the Sefer Gittin, here we're bringing it, if you like, by the by, to show that you see that inyan acher can be pasul. Okay? It says, because the Ketav Ivri legabe Yevani, kimile makom chalak, that's why it's pasul. Okay, percent. And then we'll continue from this next year. All right, have a good day.